We all know you love keeping up with old friends and posting pictures of your kids on Facebook, but did you know you can also find America's foremost family authority there? For up-to-date program information and the latest articles and insights from psychologist and best-selling author and my dad, Dr. James Dobson, go to your Facebook page and search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Again, that's Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk on Facebook. Join the growing number of fans and like us today.
Welcome back to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, and your host, as always, is psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson.
And I'm Ryan Dobson. These past few days, we've been talking with a special guest of ours, Erin McPherson, on the joys and challenges of pregnancy. Erin works with Dun and Bradstreet, where she writes and publishes educational activities for teachers and parents. She's also worked for Nickelodeon, where she served as a parenting activities and food editor.
And she has three children, Ryan, which is her greatest achievement. If you've been trekking along with us, we have covered the first and second trimesters of pregnancy. But then we ran out of time. And really, there is so much more that we still need to cover. Mm-hmm. And Ryan, unfortunately, your dad is even tied up and unable to continue the conversation with us. But we definitely cannot leave people hanging. We must conclude and address this third trimester of pregnancy.
That's right. Third trimester. And so many changes. You know, you talked in the first program, first trimester, you may not show. You feel terrible. But as far as the outside appearance goes, you know, not a whole lot changes. Third trimester, very, very different.
Mm-hmm. The third trimester is different. And it's kind of that place where you're, you know, that baby is coming soon. Mm-hmm. And the countdown starts.
Mm-hmm. And the anxiety, how is that? Are you pretty much past the fears of this pregnancy might not last?
I was at least past the fears that this pregnancy might not last. And interestingly, the further along I got in my third trimester, the less scared I was of labor. I was terrified of labor and delivery my first and second trimester. But by the time I got to that third, I was like, let's get this baby out. I don't really care how it happens, but it needs to get out.
Talk to any woman in their third trimester. I just want the baby out.
Yeah. You know? I'm like, I don't care if it hurts. I don't care what happens. Of course you do. But I want the baby out.
Mm-hmm. Was that because you had gone to classes? Talk a little bit about at what point you should go and become educated about the delivery.
Well, that's a funny story. I didn't take any childbirth classes.
Are you kidding? Even with your first?
I didn't. And here's why. Because I'm the kind of person who would rather not know until someone tells me. And so I told my husband, I was like, this is going to terrify me. I can't do it. And so I just didn't go. Now, my sisters and all my friends went and they loved going and they thought it was so informative. But I kind of liked not knowing.
And you were okay with that? Do you have any regrets?
I don't.
Well, and this is how I look at it. You were in a hospital.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, if you're going to have a home birth and you took no classes and it's like, well, when she comes, she comes. That would be a little bit scary. But you're in a hospital. You've got medical professionals there. I remember when they were washing Lucy, they were so rough with her. And at first I started to jump in and say something. And I don't know where in my brain it went, hey, you know what? This is their job. Mm. They've done this hundreds, if not thousands of times. And I was able just to stand there and go, okay, you're a pro. I'm going to sit here and watch my daughter's first bath. All
exactly.
Right.
And I wasn't totally flippant about not taking a class. I asked my OB and he said, there are some people who feel like it would cause more anxiety and more pressure. And he said he has women like that and he tells them not to take the class. And I'm one of those, I guess.
Sure.
Well, let's talk about some of the specifics, though. Let's hit one that affected all of us, probably you and me both, Erin, sleeping. That can be so disruptive during these last 3 months.
It really can. I remember this place where I wrapped like two pregnancy pillows around my body, around my back, and then propped all these other pillows. And I was like, finally, I'm comfortable. And then I had to go pee. And it just happens. We had kind of a funny solution. We had an extra twin bed at our house because we just had one in storage. And so I started sleeping on the twin bed because I felt like I was more comfortable when I was off out of the bed. And then my husband was like, well, you're not sleeping out of bed with me. So we pushed it right up next to our double bed. Aww. And we made what we called the mega bed. And at night I would roll over onto my twin bed so he didn't bother me. And I made my pillow a little nest. And then in the morning we pushed the twin bed away from the bed. So
we did the opposite. I slept on the twin bed because Laura was up. You know, I mean, you go to the bathroom 4 times an hour. So it would wake me up all the time. And I started losing more and more sleep. And my job was being affected. So I slept on the twin bed. And we both got sleep then. I mean, she didn't get very much. Obviously, you know that. But at least we were both getting some.
Yeah.
Or you might even need to sleep sitting up. Is that really true for some people?
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people with heartburn, sleeping in a recliner is really good. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I just think it's really hard to sleep. God's just getting you ready to not sleep when the baby comes.
Heartburn is a big issue for a lot of people, a lot of women, because as the baby gets bigger, it's compressing organs, digestion changes, and when you lay down, you can get really, really bad heartburn. And so some women really do benefit from sleeping in a recliner.
They do. I think I've had a lot of friends that have said that. I didn't really have that problem, but I think it's just hard to sleep when you're in your third trimester.
And sometimes it's good to talk to your doctor. You know, are there things I can take for that? Can I take a Zantac? Can I take Tums? What will actually help? And especially when you're pregnant or if you're breastfeeding, you got to talk to your doctor to make sure it's safe.
Exactly. But you're right. Talk to your doctor. See what you can do to get yourself some sleep. Don't just lay there in misery at 3 a.m., you know, crying because you can't get any sleep.
Mm-hmm. Erin, this third trimester is also when the reality of adding a whole new person to your household really comes into play. And I would like to talk a little bit here about how that affects your marriage, not just your husband as a dad, which we kind of addressed last time, but how it changes the dynamics between the two of you as a husband and wife.
Yeah, I think when you have a baby, everything is different. Suddenly there's this whole other person that's part of your family, and it's a really good different. I remember thinking it would be really hard and really a lot of pressure, and I'd never have any time to myself. And the opposite was, is I always wanted to be around my baby, and I sometimes pushed my husband to the side and my alone time to the side. And I think really talking to your husband and thinking through the dynamic of our marriage is important, and it has to be important even when the baby comes. And even when we're tired and we don't have any time for ourselves, we have to make this a priority. And that's something that I think you should talk about your third trimester.
You know, Erin, I know on your blog you hear from lots of women. Do you hear from men? Do you hear from men who feel pushed out or neglected? You've got baby showers that are going on, and typically dads don't go. And I'm also not a fan of the couple shower. Come on.
Yeah.
It's a party for my wife. That's fine. I can do that. But as a woman, how do you incorporate your husband into that third trimester so he doesn't feel neglected?
I'm really guilty of that. Like, my husband felt neglected my third trimester. He felt neglected during all my pregnancies because it was hard for me to include him in when you're like, you're right, baby showers and registering for baby things and things he wasn't interested in. And I think as women, we need to intentionally invite our husbands into our pregnancy and into our baby's lives and praying for your baby. I remember so many nights, just sweet moments where my husband would lay his hands on my stomach and just pray over our child. And that's a really powerful way to bond with your husband and make your marriage stronger, but also to help your husband get used to being a dad.
Mm-hmm. But let's take that one step further. You hinted on that a little bit. For most men, they married this woman because they loved her. And now they see the fact that a baby is coming in is going to take her from them. You can't discount the fact that you still are a husband and wife first. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine you'd caution against making all of that time that you're together still focused on the baby. There still should be times when the two of you just do favorite things you used to do or conversations that don't focus on the upcoming child. Is that true?
It is true. And it's really hard. It's still hard for me and my kids are older because kids are such an important part of my life, and I so often want to gravitate towards talking to them or including them or bringing them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exactly right. It has to be intentional. You have to say, my marriage is the most important relationship in my life, and it has to come before my kids.
And it might take the wife leading that charge, taking the initiative to go up to him and say, honey, how are things at work? What's life like for you? And stepping out of her, shall we say, myopic world, because mm-hmm. let's face it, when you're pregnant, it is kind of all about you, and everybody pampers you, or hopefully does, and you are the one that has to be taken care of, and he does get left out. I would really challenge women during this time to be the one that takes those glasses off and goes up to their husband and says, I want to hear about you. How are you doing? What's work going like? How is your, you know, what's going on with you? Wouldn't you agree?
I think you're spot on with that. It has to be the woman that takes the charge because the man hasn't been the one that's been the center of everything. And the woman has to step out and say, I love this man and I want him to be the leader of my family and I want him to be my husband and have this mm-hmm. relationship. And you're exactly right. Draw your husband in. I don't know if this is all husbands, but my husband, if I allowed him, would drift off, like almost like he didn't want to bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And we would drift apart very
mm-hmm.
quickly.
Mm-hmm. Because they're very gracious. They're not going to push
sure.
their way in. And you're sending a message that there's something else going on here right now. I can completely understand
exactly.
That.
I think he would do it like out of courtesy for me. Mm-hmm. And it would be hurtful to him. But mm-hmm. he would do it to be nice to me. And it would destroy things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe another conversation to have during the third trimester is, we aren't going to have as much time as we had before if it's a first child. You just won't. I didn't really realize how true that was until we had our second child and I saw how much time I didn't have for our first. You know, Lincoln doesn't get as much time with me as he did before his sister came along. and that's been difficult. And so he and I have those conversations now where I tell him, it's got to be hard, and I know that you don't like it, and I'm going to work on solutions to be with you more, and it's changed. And we have to do that with our spouses and our kids.
We do, and it's interesting. I think a lot of time I had with my husband before we had kids was a given. It was a given that in the evening we could eat dinner together, and it was a given that on Saturdays we could just hang out in the morning and, you know, pick up the house together or read the Bible together or go to church together. And suddenly you have kids, and all those things that were just kind of automatic and time given are gone. Mm-hmm. You can't necessarily sit down to dinner because the baby might start crying. And it means you have to be intentional with your relationship and your time. You have to say, yeah, I just want to lounge out on the couch right now, but my husband needs me and I need to walk over to him and give him a little bit of my time.
You know, Ryan, you just hinted at that too when you talked about when Lucy was born, how that changed the dynamic with Lincoln. Erin, talk a little bit about a second and third pregnancy. We've kind of focused on a pregnancy sounding like it's your very first time ever, but most women will have a second, third, and in my case, a fourth child. How different is the pregnancy when you've already had a child and you're caring for a baby in one arm and you can't quite stop the world and put the feet up like you recall doing with the first child?
I know. I thought my first pregnancy was hard because I had to work. And then I realized being pregnant with a one-year-old is a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. Your second pregnancy is a lot harder in that you're taking care of another kid, but it's also easier in one way that I remember, and that's that you know the outcome. Mm-hmm. You know what it brings. I think the first time there's that whole obscure feeling that Dr. Dobson was talking about where, how am I going to love this child? Do I know who is this child going to be? The second time, you know you're going to love that child. Mm-hmm. You know that that baby is worth every minute, and it makes it easier.
I also found that it was almost a distraction to have another child there. Whereas if I wasn't feeling 100% or something like that, when it was just me, I could pamper myself or go and, you know, just indulge. But sometimes that other child there gets you out of that self-pity or, you know, maybe a downward spiral. And it's a good distraction to have something else to focus on instead of just yourself the whole time.
It is a good distraction. And I remember that with my third pregnancy because I had two older kids.
I'm sorry. I have to interrupt you. It's a good distraction.
Yeah.
Because you realize it is. It's got to be a lot harder, though.
It is harder. Well, like I'm saying, it was harder my second time because my oldest was only 19 months old. My third time, it was easy because my kids were 4 and 6.
You know, we haven't talked about delivery. And did the anxiety lessen for the two of you with second delivery and third delivery?
It did a lot.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fear of the unknown is almost worse than what the reality is. I was terrified, well, until the end when I just wanted the baby out.
Yeah.
And then reality wasn't near as bad as my fears had been.
Mm. Yep. Erin, in your book, The Christian Mama's Guide to Having a Baby, you describe something called a push present. Explain that.
You know, it sounds like a horrible idea. My brother-in-law, I told him about it, and he's like, that's horrible. But then he saw how much his wife loved it when he got her just this little pair of $30 earrings and handed to her right after she had the baby. And her eyes, he told me, he said, that was the best idea I ever had. And a push present, the idea is just the husband picking up something little for his wife to give to her after she delivers his baby.
Thus pushing.
Why, yeah. And it can be something really small. Like my husband got me something really small. I think it was a little tiny necklace and it was probably like $30. And it was worth so much to me just because of the sentiment and the fact that he had thought of me. Or if you have a whole lot of money, get a diamond ring.
When did he present that to you?
He gave it to me right after I had had my son. And he just kind of handed it, put it around my neck. And I thought, wow, he thought of me.
So an intimate moment that says we're still husband and wife, we are still you and me, even though this third person has come into our family.
Exactly. And it was just kind of the thought that he had thought about me, and he had thought about that I had had a hard time, and he had thought about that our family was going to move forward that way. It meant a lot.
Erin, talk to the woman, though, who has a set plan of what she wants to occur.
That is me. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Really?
I had a plan. I was going to go in, and I was going to be 5 centimeters dilated when I went into the hospital, and they were going to give me an epidural right away, and I was going to have the baby 2 hours later. It was going to be perfect. And then I got there, and my baby's heartbeat dropped, and emergency C-section within a couple hours of getting to the hospital. And I was like, wait a second, I wasn't supposed to have a C-section. Everything was supposed to be what I had planned. And it was hard because I kept thinking, did I fail? Did this not happen right? But I think Ryan had said this earlier, I came home with a baby. Mm-hmm. And he was healthy and he was fine and he survived. And yeah, I had a C-section, which I didn't want to have. And my birth plan was, I mean, I don't think a single point of my birth plan actually came to fruition.
Really?
But I had a baby.
Yeah. Ryan, explain what you were talking about earlier.
We had so many questions with Lincoln of, you know, should we get an epidural? Should we not get an epidural? And he said, well, you're going to find people who believe 100% one way or the other, and they don't like each other. You're going to hear all kinds of things. He said, let me tell you this. If at the end of the day you bring a baby home, you win. Hmm. So if you don't want to have an epidural and you come in and you have to have an emergency C-section and you have to have an epidural, you get to go home with a baby. You can have a plan, but if you have to deviate from that, always remember the goal is baby. And that really helped us. That really, it calmed our, you know, with Lincoln, Laura had an epidural. With Lucy, there wasn't time. And Laura, you know, she has fondness for both pregnancies and both deliveries in different ways.
But your C-section story there, that's pretty dramatic, Erin. I mean, for a woman who thinks she can just kind of sail through this, maybe she's been fairly healthy and energetic and has been able to exercise and everything, and she is kind of an in-control gal. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's even thinking, I'm going to return to normal, and she has scheduled things that happened a few weeks after her due date. That C-section really interrupts that, doesn't it?
It interrupted me, and it shocked me, and I had a whole range of emotions. I'm going to have a scar the rest of my life. I failed at childbirth. 100 years ago, I wouldn't have even survived childbirth. Really wow. Kind of silly things to think. But I think those are the emotions we go through. And I just want to caution women. I say this in my book, that you can have a birth plan. You should know and write and plan what you want. But you have to trust whatever happens. The end result is what matters.
Mm. Well, the thoughts you had are not silly. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of women who have thought the exact same thing. And I'm glad we're talking to them right now.
Mm-hmm. Erin, while we're here in this third trimester season of life, quite honestly, one thing that all of these new couples are dealing with is all of the equipment and the baby needs that they think they have to buy. You've already indicated that you didn't really have a lot of money when you were pregnant the first time. Most people do not. Give us the essentials. What really do they have to have as far as equipment to prepare for that baby coming home?
I said in my book there's only 4 things that every single baby needs, and that's a car seat. And I actually am going to adjust on that one because I have a friend in New York who doesn't have a car, and so she doesn't use a car seat.
Well,
so I'm
going
to even take one of my things off the list.
Oh, man.
But most babies need a car seat. Diapers, and I guess you need wipes. I'll put that in the same category. Something to wear and somewhere to sleep. And I'm not even going to say that has to be a crib because there's so many different places you can sleep. I mean, like a bassinet or a pack and play. There's all sorts of options. Now, of course, there's other things that you probably want, like a stroller. But I have a friend who never used a stroller because her mom lived down the street from her and she carried her baby to her mom's house and she never really took her baby shopping.
Mm. Wow. So really, a crib or bassinet or some kind of bed place mm-hmm. for the child to sleep, for the baby to sleep, something for the baby to wear, and diapers.
Yeah.
You hear that, husbands? Really, I mean, us wives tell you you need to go to all of these stores and get everything, uh-huh. but really it comes down to that.
Now I'm going to get a lot of wives mad at me because they're going to be like, wait a second, I wanted that wipe warmer.
Oh, yeah. We had that for a while. And then it just became like, ugh, really? I got to refill this and keep putting water in it. Someone gave one to us that they had stopped using, and it was great for a while. Mm-hmm. Again, with second kid, you really realize what you need and you don't need.
Exactly.
And some of those things are great. To be fair, the swing that goes back and forth is huge. Some of the jump up things. So you'll discover that. But really, when you're dirt poor and you're getting ready to have your first child, there's minimal needs mm-hmm. that are required. And I think that's helpful for you to say that.
I think there are minimal needs. I also think a lot of your needs can be met secondhand. I wrote on Facebook a while back that my first two hated the swing. They never used it. And so I didn't have a swing. I'd given it away. And then my baby was born and he seemed to love to be rocked. And I put on Facebook, does anyone have a swing? I had like 5 swings at my house within an hour.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
You go.
And so suddenly borrowing from friends who don't need their swings anymore is a lot better option than buying a whole bunch of new stuff.
Because most of these things you use are for a very short window of time.
Exactly. Like 2 or 3 months. And then you pass it on to the next person.
And most people get more than they need.
Exactly.
You know, Lincoln desperately needed the swing to sleep. He needed a little vibrating hoop chair and all of that. Lucy doesn't need that much stuff. And Laura and I were like, who do we give this stuff to? Local pregnancy resource centers need baby stuff.
Good point.
The diapers, when your kid grows out of diapers and you've still got a 50-pack left over, bring them there. Or, again, go to Facebook. kids are expensive. Diapers are expensive. And if you've got leftovers, say, hey, I've got size 2T and, you know, anybody
need
them.
You're right. There are so many places that need them. I know Teen Mops collects baby gear from teen moms. And like you said, pregnancy resource centers. Give that stuff away that you don't need and recycle it. And then ask your friends for stuff that you can borrow.
Erin, before we close out this third day, I also want to just return to something you hinted at before. That's the whole sacred spiritual aspect of giving birth like this. I kind of relate to that because my third child, when we went in and I found out I was pregnant, and they look up that little, it used to be a little cardboard circular chart that determines your due date. Maybe I'm dating myself. Do they still do it that way?
There's an app for it now.
Yeah,
probably.
I'll never forget it. Our very first appointment, and they took all of the blood work and everything, and they said, you are due on Christmas Day. December 25th, and that was with Kenny. It was such an exciting thing. I literally got to parallel Mary, the mother of Jesus, as I was pregnant. And I can't tell you the number of times that I would open the scripture or something and we'd get closer to Christmas, and I literally could relate to Mary, the mother of Jesus. That was my experience. But even beyond that, there really is a closeness to the Lord that can and should occur during this time.
It's really funny that you're saying parallel Mary, the mother of Jesus, because my first was due on Christmas Day.
Oh.
And I was really upset because I was like, his birthday's going to be on Christmas.
The rest of my life.
But I do understand what you're saying about this spiritual thing. I remember reading, it was a scripture in Psalms, but it made me realize, you know, God has like formed my baby for a purpose. He has built me to mother this child. And I felt this like weight of obligation, but also this weight of like privilege that God has given me this incredible blessing. And it's hard to conceptualize how, as moms, we have this huge responsibility and we're so ill-equipped for it.
Oh, completely.
But then God comes in and teaches us how to do it and shows us. And like, there are days I make mistakes, but I know that I have a God that's watching over me and teaching me and showing me what to do with these kids because he wants them to love him.
Erin, I think that sums it up just perfectly. Mm-hmm. After 3 days that you've given us to talk about the whole stages and emotions and everything of pregnancy, to land on the fact that our God equipped us with everything we need to carry and give birth to this child, that just sums it all up. And so thank you for being here with us 2 days with Dr. Dobson and then returning on this visit.
That's
for
right.
Me and Ryan. Again, we've been speaking with Erin McPherson, author of The Christian Mama's Guide to Having a Baby. I love the subtitle here, Ryan. Everything You Need to Know to Survive and Love Your Pregnancy So It Can Happen.
That's right. Erin, thank you so much. It's
thank
been
you.
A great 3 days.
It's been really fun. Thank you, guys.
And so important as well, Ryan. Mm. This is just a subject that so many of us women have questions about, but we rarely stop to ask them.
Oh, I agree, Luann. And I hope dads and husbands have tuned into these discussions as well. I mean, what women go through in those 9 months is tough. I mean, it's exhausting and painful. So it's been nice to learn more about what our wives are dealing with so that we know how to support them in those pregnancies.
And, you know, that is something we desire more than anything, just to know that our husbands are there to support us in whatever way we may need. Even though that may seem like a small task, Ryan, it's huge to every pregnant woman.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're interested in purchasing one of Erin's books that we've discussed in the past few days, The Christian Mama's Guide to Having a Baby, The Christian Mama's Guide to Baby's First Year, The Christian Mama's Guide to Parenting a Toddler, or A Christian Mama's Guide to the First School Years.
I'm seeing a pattern there, right?
I think so. You can find out how to do so at drjamesdobson.org or by giving us a call. Our number is 877-732-6825.
And while you're at drjamesdobson.org, check out the link we have to Erin's blog as well as the Christian Mama's Guide website. Mm-hmm. While you're there, you can get to know Erin a little better and keep up with her daily joys and challenges. It is always an adventure.
It is. I love her blog. It
it's
is so
great.
Fun to read. I also highly recommend my dad's books, Bringing Up Girls and Bringing Up Boys. Also, The Strong-Willed Child. Now, these are some wonderful resources you can add to your library or give to a friend.
You can tell that we know that pregnancy and parenting can be pretty difficult, right, Ryan?
You can.
We want to make sure you are equipped for this journey right from the beginning. So again, to find out how to get any of these resources, check out drjamesdobson.org or give us a call, 877-732-6825.
And here in the close, I want to mention that we are a completely listener-supported ministry. And if you'd like to donate to Family Talk, we would appreciate it. And you can do so over the phone, via our smartphone app, on our Facebook page or by calling us one last time. Our number is 877-732-6825.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and we invite you back next time as we turn our attention to the men with some specific encouragement to you stepfathers. That's next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Imagine a world where huge numbers of older Americans, and some younger ones too, will submit themselves to killing clinics, supposedly for the benefit of those they love. They become heroes.
That disturbing thought becomes very real in Dr. James Dobson's brand new novel, Fatherless, but it's a scenario that co-author Kurt Bruner explains could become a catalyst for change.
As the world gets darker and darker, the family as God designed it becomes more and more brilliant as a shining light. That's part of what we hope will happen. People will read these novels and realize, yes, it's getting darker and darker, but I can love my spouse, can nurture my children, and realize that it's the creation of those bright spots that will over time dissipate the darkness that's rising.
Request your copy of Fatherless today at drjamesdobson.org. That's Fatherless at drjamesdobson.org.